Chapter 23. Goading Catastrophe.
"You mean to go to him now?" Jarlaxle asked incredulously. He and Camoriel stood alone in a side chamber just off the forge of Cusor Lauren, which they both expected would soon enough be known as the Great Forge of Gontalgrim once more. The dwarves had secured the main lower chamber, had even put the staircase back up, and were already fortifying their foothold and constructing war engines to sweep clear the lower level. Neither Jarlaxle nor Kimoriel were convinced there would soon be anything left to sweep, however, for the demons were once again acting very much like demons. Orc slave, goblin slave, Rothe, or even dark elf, it did not matter. With the fall of Marilith and Nalfeshni, the abyssal beasts had turned. Any creature of the prime material plane was now prey, and even the lesser demons shied from their larger, insatiable abyssal kin. And so the Zorlarans had retreated to this very small area around the Great Forge and the Primordial Chamber, their wizards nervously readying spells of banishment or evocation, anything to be rid of rampaging demons.
"It is the appointed time," Camoriel calmly answered. "The Archmage is not forgiving of my tardiness.
The Enclave of Cusor Lauren will likely be wiped out before you return," Jarlaxle pointed out.
Kimoriel shrugged as if he hardly cared. "This city will find its fate whether I am here or not.
When the dwarves come, perhaps I will need you,"
Kimoriel scoffed. "Jarlaxle, you have more friends among their ranks than in Cusor Lauren," he said. And he closed his eyes, opened his distance-warping mental gate, and stepped far, far away to the antechamber of Archmage Gromph in the distant city of Menzo Baranzon. He found Gromph in the other room, sitting at his desk and tapping his fingers together pensively.
"Ill news will soon arrive from Cusor Lauren," Kimoriel warned.
The Archmage nodded, seeming unsurprised. He had felt the fall of Marilith, his demon.
"Are you prepared?" Kimoriel telepathically reached out to his student.
No reply.
"Perhaps we should forsake your instruction this day," the psionicist offered, and he was reading the Archmage's mind as he imparted that thought.
Gromph did a good job in feigning only limited interest in pursuing the lesson when he responded, but Kimoriel knew better. The Archmage had nearly panicked at the thought of foregoing the lesson, and understandably so to Kimoriel, who knew that Gromph believed that psionics were giving him the edge in summoning extraplanar creatures, an edge he'd likely need soon enough, with Quenthel Bayenri holding a Goristro at her side, and with Marilith now banished back to her abyssal home.
Yes, Kimoriel mused, Gromph would be very receptive to his quiet background impartations this day.
And so he would give to Gromph all of the missing words and inflections, the completed spell, and let chaos reign, and let catastrophe reign upon Menzo Baranzon and House Bayenri.
Matron Mother Xerath sat upon her throne in the primordial chamber of Gontalgrim, the open pit steaming behind her, the wall in front of her covered in webbing. All of her principal advisors were there. Archmage Sabrak, High Priestess Kiri, Hoshtar, Jaimus, and Phyllis among them.
"We must be gone from this place," Phyllis advised. "To remain is foolhardy."
"Nay, we must kill the dwarves," the often fanatical Kiri argued. "The Spider Queen demands no less of us."
"They will overrun us," Jaimus flatly stated.
"We will turn the demons back."
"No, we won't," a clearly defeated Matron Mother Xerath interrupted.
"Then call out to Matron Mother Bayenri,"
the High Priestess begged.
"She will grant us allies as we continue the fight."
"Even if she sent a second army, even if it was led by a demon as powerful as Marilith once more, they would not arrive in time to save Cusor Lauren."
"Then what do we do, Matron Mother?"
Hoshtar asked, and his tone showed that he knew well enough.
"The tunnels below will shield us," Matron Mother Xerath said. "The dwarves will not chase us far beyond their precious forge and the beast that powers the furnaces of this place. So we will leave. Let the dwarves and the demons battle to the last."
"And then we will return," said Kiri.
And the matron mother nodded and smiled, but unconvincingly to any who cared to study her more closely. Xerath waved them away then, telling them to gather together the family and begin the retreat.
She motioned for Sabrak to stay behind with her, though.
"Bring to me the newest prisoners," she instructed when she was alone with the wizard. She nodded to the webbing.
"You mean to greet the invaders?" Sabrak asked skeptically. "Dwarves are not known for their mercy, Matron Mother."
"I have enough with which to bargain," she assured him.
Sabrak shook his head.
"We could just..."
"Do as I say," Xerath cut him short. "I'll not have an army of dwarves chasing my house through the Underdark."
Sabrak started to argue yet again, but Matron Mother Xerath's scowl chased him away.
"Well played, Matron Mother," said the only other person in the room, the one whose presence had been known only to Xerath.
"That's just what I meant to say to you these last days, Jarlaxle," the Matron Mother answered. "Do I congratulate you, or is there another who would lay claim to the credit?"
"You wound me, truly," said the mercenary, moving over and casually sitting upon the altar stone, one leg dangling off the far end, the other foot comfortably settled on the floor in front of him. "I did not orchestrate the events, but do pride myself on being the first to understand where those events will lead."
If his words convinced Matron Mother Xerath, she surely didn't show it. She glanced at the room's main exit, her expression revealing her desire to take her leave.
"You guarantee my safety?"
"That was the deal," Jarlaxle replied.
"A deal I am sure to regret, of course."
"The best deal you will be offered."
"I am a Matron Mother of Menzo Baranzon."
"You were," Jarlaxle corrected. "Would you bring your tattered house back to the City of Spiders? Where will you now rank in that hierarchy, I wonder?"
"Sor Lauren was the third house, and—"
she protested. "Was," the clever mercenary said again. "Can you claim the favor of Lolf?" He laughed, and it sounded very much like a mocking snort. "My dear Matron Mother Xerath, were you ever truly in the favor of Lolf?"
"Third house," she replied.
"We know the truth of the familial rankings, so please do not take that as confirmation. Lolf rarely meddles in such minutiae, and hardly cares beyond the identity of the Matron Mother of the first house." "I grow weary of your chiding," she said. "Be warned."
"I am doing no such thing," he earnestly protested.
"Now is the time for honesty, for your sake more than mine, so let us speak the truth. My fondness for you goes back many years, you know this. You alone among the Matron Mothers value the men of your house as greatly as the women."
"Barriss and Delarmgo," Jarlaxle snorted. "The witch Mez Barriss uses her men as she would a pack of guard dogs, biting instruments to bring glory to the priestesses of her house, herself paramount. But you've never been like that."
He spoke the last words quietly, and after a proper glance around to ensure that no one had entered, he reached out and gently and intimately stroked Xerath Zorlaren's cheek. And she let him, for the touch was not unfamiliar to her, though it had been years.
"Lolf will punish me if I do this," she said.
"She has not punished me," Jarlaxle argued, "and I have been doing this for centuries. But she will see my desertion."
"It is not a desertion," Jarlaxle insisted. He shook his head.
"My old friend, do not give in to the fear that the Spider Queen oversees our every move, or that she cares. Her ambitions are quite beyond us, I assure you. Archmage Gromf summoned Marilith and sent her here, under his direct command, and yet the rogue Doerden slayed her."
Xerath's eyes flashed at the mention of Drizzt. Jarlaxle shook his head and gave her a stern glance, silently but clearly warning her to forget that obvious thought. Every drow in Menzo Baranzon seemed to believe that bringing the head of Drizzt would somehow garner great fame and stature and the favor of the Spider Queen. But Jarlaxle knew better, knew that it was a fool's mission. In Menzo Baranzon there was no bigger fool than Tiago Bayenri, and his obsession with the rogue Doerden had already cost him greatly.
"As you come to understand Drizzt Doerden the way I do, you will learn," he promised.
"You will introduce me to him," Matron Mother Xerath said.
"In time," was all that Jarlaxle would offer, and to his thinking, that might be a very, very long time.
though of course Jarlaxle expected that Drizzt might well meet Xerath this very day.
"This is difficult for you," Jarlaxle said. "I am the matron mother of a powerful house. Your family will survive, and so your house will survive. Under the suffrage of, I promise you, a great measure of autonomy," Jarlaxle reminded her.
Matron Mother Xerath seemed unconvinced and even shook her head.
"You pretend that you have options," Jarlaxle reminded her. "It would be easier for me to abandon you here and let you play out your story in the Underdark, or back in Menzo Baranzon with my unmerciful sister. If Quenthel Beanri finds advantage in having you murdered, know that your death will not be painless."
"And what might Matron Mother Beanri think of your designs should I go to her?"
Xerath asked, a rather pitiful attempt to take back the upper hand.
"She would applaud." Jarlaxle let his smile linger for a moment before the sound of a distant door caught his attention.
"Sabrak returns," he said. "You have time to consider the wider reaches of my offer, of course. Quite a bit of time once this immediate crisis is averted, and your safety is my guarantee. For now, your best play is to remain."
Matron Mother Xerath stared at him for a few long moments, then nodded, and Jarlaxle disappeared once more into the shadows of the webbing, right before Archmage Sabrak arrived with the prisoners in tow. Gromf wasn't surprised by the next visitor to his quarters this day. The matron mother entered with hardly an announcement, and with a scowl that told him that she too knew of the failures in Cusor Lauren.
"Your demon has fallen," she said in greeting.
"Along with many, it would seem," Gromf calmly answered. "Matron Mother Xerath will not hold for long, I presume."
"The dwarves will reclaim Gontalgrim, but they will never hold it," the matron mother vowed.
Gromf did well not to laugh out loud at that pronouncement. He found this whole adventure rather silly. How many resources would Quenthel squander in trying to evict the formidable dwarves? And for what practical gain?
"Because next time I will be wiser than to rely on the foolish Gromf for such important matters," the matron mother added, and she sounded so small and petulant at that moment. Had she abandoned the wisdom of Ivanel?
The Archmage just stared at her, unsure as to what any of this could mean. The satellite city of Cusor Lauren had been brought down, or soon would be, it seemed. But in the end, most of Matron Mother Xerath's house would escape, and so the loss would be minimal to Menzo Baranzon. In fact, such an event might even strengthen Quenthel's hold over the ruling council, for it would remove a very sharp thorn from the side of House Hunsrin and the Malarney fanatics, and that alliance was one that Matron Mother Mez Barris Armgo could actually use to weaken House Beanri.
"Your demon led the defense," the Matron Mother spat. "This failure falls upon your shoulders. Be cautious, wizard, for Sabrax or Lauren will surely survive this, and he remains in the graces of the Spider Queen."
She spun and swept out of the room, and Gromf fell back in his seat, his fingers tap-tapping once more. He tried to dismiss Quenthel's overt threat, but he began to see some troubling possibilities. Would his sister cut a deal with Matron Mother Xerath to absorb House Zor-Lauren into House Beanri? Where might the Zor-Larens go if the dwarves gained an unshakable foothold? They would not be welcomed back into Menzo Baranzon as a rival house, particularly not now with so many backroom alliances being formed among the ruling matron mothers. And perhaps Quenthel would spread the whispers that Gromf had failed, that the Archmage had, in fact, been the cause of the loss of Cusor Lauren. In that event, would Quenthel be in a stronger position to offer Xerath one of her most coveted trophies, a Zor-Lauren as Archmage of Menzo Baranzon? Nay, this was not a threat Gromf could easily dismiss. And in that realization, so came his outrage. Barely had Quenthel left the Tower of Sorcere when Gromf began his spellcasting, twining in the psionic insights to heighten the spell, or so he thought. In truth, the Archmage was obliviously casting Lolth's spell, given to him through Camuriel in the guise of the captured Kjorl Odrin.
Gromp's long-developed sense of caution should have clarified the truth to him, but his anger and ego overruled his common sense, and so he pressed on.
Aminem, timti et spem,
he chanted. Words he did not know, a language he did not know, but he somehow understood, or that he believed at least, that this chant aligned perfectly with his usual vocalizations for his spells of summoning. This was the perfect joining, psionics and arcane magic, perhaps the greatest and purest call to the lower planes any mortal had made in centuries. He would replace the fallen Marilith with something bigger, with a Baelor likely, and one to match and exceed Quenthal's current pet. Or perhaps several of the major demons would come to his call, bound and allied under the sheer power of his will.
Ovisin Trentis vobis om.
He had to work hard to keep a bubbling chuckle out of his voice when he felt the power growing within him. He could visualize his hand reaching for the Faerseris, prodding through the boundary between the planes, demanding an answer to his call.
And he felt the presence. A Baelor? A great one indeed. The strength of the demon resonated within him.
He reached deeper, unwittingly wounding the boundary of the Faerseris. He reached for the great power that lurked there in the shadows, just out of sight, only barely beyond his grasping thoughts. But he could stretch.
Timti et spem.